Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Hey, welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hey, welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. Welcome back for another week. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks.
Oh, nice. That was good.
Wait, did I just re-host?
No. All right, loving good. John, loving good. Let's see what you got.
I don't know what to say I got, but
No, start over. Come on. You got to do it. You got to do the intro.
Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks, home of Mark, John, and John of Movies, Films, and Flicks. I don't really know what to say. I'm a terrible host. Yeah. I'm trying to put on a porn voice, and I probably even failed at that. I don't know what I'm doing. Is that a radio voice?
I don't know.
I don't think I'm ugly enough to be a host. Not you, John. I'm thinking of radio hosts.
Are you saying we all have faces made for radio?
I seem saying. To have dug a horrible hole. Yeah. No, you know, the other day someone was telling me how great Lazbeth's voice is as a host.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
They were digging on it. They were going like really into it. I'm like, geez Louise.
My inspirations are Carrie Kasem, Ryan Seacrest, Sloth from the Goonies.
Sloth? Bobcat Goldthwait?
Yeah, Bobcat Goldthwait.
Bobcat Goldthwait from Police Academy.
Mm-hmm. Michael Winslow.
Wait, can anyone do a Bobcat Goldthwait impression?
That sounded nothing like Bobcat Goldthwait.
Wait, Mark. No, hold on. That was actually like the most accurate impression that Mark's ever done. I actually thought it was good.
All right. Well, while you're riding that streak, Mark, do a Michael Caine real quick.
She was only 16.
Oh, man.
That was like Crocodile Dundee's cousin.
One of these days, you're going to get that Michael Caine impression.
Wait, all right. I'm getting real snotty so I can get nasally. All right. She was
only
16.
Sound like the same Crocodile Dundee's cousin who needs to blow his nose now.
This is Michael Caine introducing the show. Hello, and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Michael Caine. Joining me today are John Lazavath, John Levingood, and the shark from Jaws.
Evidently, you're doing Michael Caine doing impression of you.
Well, Michael Caine can do a great impersonation on me. Actually, this is Michael Caine talking, doing an impersonation of me, because I just took the night off. And I went, hey, Mikey C, come fill in. He goes, yeah, that's cool.
Did you ask her how old she was?
He said, do not answer. Wait, I almost went into like an Italian accent.
All right.
I can't do it, guys.
All right. Maybe another time. We'll try again.
Yeah.
Let me go. You were about to say something before I made you host.
Yeah, you know, I was reflecting way back when in episode 26, we discussed a couple horror hybrids, and Mark had reflected on like why he considered certain movies horror hybrids, and I only just this last week got around to watching one of them that inspired him with this, and it was Honeymoon, and it was an amazing movie. It's on Netflix right now, folks, in the U.S. anyway. And that movie just like knocked my socks off with awesomeness.
Hey, for our next pod, we're talking about Honeymoon and Hush. So if you want to, you know, keep up with the conversation and ask them some questions about them movies.
Yeah.
That's right. And both of those movies on Netflix right now.
Right now.
And watch
it. Right now, it is what? May
9th. 9th,
2016.
Yeah. Yeah. Just watch me not watch those movies.
Well, hey, look, if you're going to watch, if folks listening, if you only watch one of those movies, watch Honeymoon. Not because it's the one that I watched as well, but it has the girl, it has Rose Leslie, or Leslie Rose. Rose Leslie? Rose
Leslie. Leslie Rose.
Rose Leslie, who plays Ygritte in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
She does a remarkable job. I mean, both the actors do. But, I mean, this is a really cool movie.
And Hush is only 80 minutes. It's by the guy who did Oculus, so if you have time to burn.
Yeah.
Right. It's like it's almost like Hush is one of the 89 fever dreams from Oculus.
That's right. Hey, can we watch you not watch a movie? Can you film that?
Okay. Watch me not watch a movie?
Well, Lazabeth, can you film yourself not watching a movie, and then we can watch it?
I mean, I could try. So,
is it almost like Mystery Science Theater where we see the silhouette of Laz in front of the movie Hush, but we also see his screen on his phone as he goes through Facebook?
Yeah.
So then we are Mystery Science Theatering Lazavath, who's Mystery Science Theatering the movie, except he's just commenting on his Facebook, and then we are commenting on the movie and his Facebook simultaneously, finding links between the two.
This could be a really cool thing. It's too meta.
I'm going to comment on your Facebook post while you're posting.
You know, I'll bet that there was a time when they were shopping around the script for Wes Craven's New Nightmare where they're like, it's too meta. And then later when Scream came around, they're like, I'll bet the studio heads were just, I don't get it. And people aren't going to get it. And you know what? People loved it.
Well, not at first.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't think watching me not watch a movie isn't going to be a...
Rear Window Redux.
No. Yeah. Ooh. Anyway.
Something.
New Nightmare caused Scream, so that's why we're happy.
Let's start the show off like we usually do with a listener question. Lemon Good, I think you have a listener question. Don't watch me not answer the listener question.
I'm just going to comment on what you're looking at over your shoulder on Facebook while you should be answering.
Well, I've got my eyes on you guys, so...
See, I'm watching you now.
I'm watching Lemon Good.
Our question comes from Paul from St. Petersburg, Florida. He's a first-time contributor. He asks,
St. Pete,
does Tony Stark design a suit to be form over function or function over form? And at first, I was a little curious by this question, but then he sent me a video, and it was from, I think, Iron Man 2, where he has the briefcase that he grabs and it turns into his suit.
Yeah.
And that kind of, like, brought it up to mind to me of, like, does that suit do all the stuff that his other suits do?
No, you know, I think it's like a drip coffee maker compared to, like, a big-time espresso maker. You know what I mean? It gets the job done. But it doesn't have all the bells and whistles.
It's like you didn't spend all the money on the full version of something. You're just getting the demo.
Yeah. So this is like a, oh crap, backup. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. If you're trying to pack like, because his regular Iron Man suit, we remember like in the first movie when part of it got deactivated, it's like he can barely move in that thing. Whereas this briefcase, he was able to carry. So it's actually about what? 300 pounds lighter than his normal Iron Man suits. I wonder if it takes can withstand the same kind of force. Like,
no.
What's going on with that?
I don't think so, because Whiplash hit him once, and it rocked his suit pretty hard.
I like to think that Whiplash's effect on those suits was a product of bad writing and not Whiplash. The strength of Whiplash.
I don't even know what his powers were, to be honest with you. He got crushed by that car, and he's like, where's my parrot?
You know, honestly, clearly, I was distracted by Mickey Rourke's like flabby gut during that scene. I was like, "Ooh!"
I was more just by his hair. He had like frosted tips.
And he had like that.
Dude,
really
he's a pretty
bad...
stylish and scary guy, though, for someone in his 60s at the time.
Just sitting in the middle of nowhere, Russia.
Yeah.
Snapping necks for fun and in prisons.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Mark.
So, I mean, he has different – he has the Hulkbuster. He has the suitcase. He has all those suits in Iron Man 3. I think he kind of makes whatever he needs for that occasion. You know, like for me, I have cardigans, right? And my cardigans express my mood. And when I'm in danger, I need my blue cardigan. You know what I'm saying? When I'm going out and I need to be cash, I got my gray cardigan. You know what I'm saying? When I'm driving, I need my gray cardigan but with blue pockets.
Cardigans are like mood stones for Mark and Timothy Oliphant. You always know how they're feeling based on their cardigans. And if they're in a Henley, you already know to just put a filter over that in the first place.
Vin Diesel and I got to chill out with the Henleys. And Bucky, the Winter Soldier, he rocked a Henley too. We're starting the Henley crew.
Haven't you once worn like a cardigan over a Henley over a V-neck?
Yes.
At like one of our conventions.
Yeah. The triple V, I think I call it.
Yeah. Man. And then I called you triple fanting.
Yeah, I triple fanted one day.
It sounds like a triple Lindy, like a diver, an acrobatic maneuver. But yeah, you were triple fanting.
I was triple Oliphant. I was legit. I did the triple font.
So, Mark,
anyone out there who speaks Spanish, it comes from the verb Oliphantar. That is to fant or to oliphant.
Mark, I get the feeling if you were designing an Iron Man suit, it would just have like a deep kind of V, like space. Yep. Yeah.
It'd be a button up.
Sweatered lapel.
It'd be a button up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
And there would be different ones for different climates, because I have some that are like legit cardigans. You know, I have real flannels, and then I have faux flannel, like fitted shirts. You know what I mean? Like tailored shirts. So I got shirts that look like flannel. Yeah. And they say, hey, I like flannel, but I also like tailored shirts. But then I have the legit flannel for when it's cold. Hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think Iron Man copied my cardigan style. Hmm.
So wait, which one of you brought up the point of all the different Iron Mans?
I did, yeah.
So he has all those, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that was the only movie, though, where he has such diversity. It's like... Then later, it's like he simply had his regular Iron Man suit or his briefcase suit in terms of use.
Well, and then he was suffering from PTSD, so he had all that free time.
Okay.
And that's why he turned the company over to Pepper. So he just, all he was doing was making suits between Iron Man 2 and 3, because he was just crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, he was making suits so he could save the world because he was so stressed out.
Yeah. Because Iron Man 3, he had like a literal army of Iron Man suits.
Mm-hmm.
Which he needed to fight the army of
blob shooters,
eating idiots.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it's got to be, I guess I would say form over function, because Tony Stark, you know, as genius as big a genius as he is, he's also very flashy. He's very much a style over substance kind of guy. Like he'll make something. Like, if it looks cool, and he'll figure out how to make it work later, you know? Like, he's just that type of guy. Like, you remember that scene in Iron Man 1 where he's like, we'll do, like, the candy red paint on it. Like, if you're... if you're, like, trying to become, like, a superhero, do you really want to make yourself stand out like that? Wouldn't you want your suit to be kind of inconspicuous? Maybe just kind of blend into the surroundings?
I don't think that any superhero is listening to that notion except for Batman.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I feel like, you know, he's definitely, you know, putting form over function, but they both take a backseat to style.
I mean, you know that in every suit he has a bottle of champagne somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Wait. So, actually, this is kind of funny because I never thought of this so directly until Laz made his comment. But, Laz, you were saying, like, how, you know, you should make your suit inconspicuous. Is it me, or might Captain America have had a slightly easier time fighting Nazis and not being targeted with bullets if he wasn't dressed as an American flag?
Yeah. You have that giant shield as well.
Like, I mean, just make the shield, like, dull gray. Give it some city camo.
I will say this, though. The Captain America uniform that he wears gets kind of toned down. From Captain America 1 to Captain America 2, because the colors in the uniform they're not as bright. They're kind of, it's a more modern looking suit. I don't know if you guys ever noticed that, but the colors definitely got toned down. So, but Tony Stark, his Iron Man suits seem to get flashier and brighter. I
mean, not unless you know he's getting beaten down. Does it ever lose its glimmer?
Yeah,
I think you're right. But then there's also a caveat for like he doesn't also want to die. So he looked pretty fabulous in Civil War.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? In terms of form over function, I get this is a we're talking about movies and comic books, so it's obviously the imagination comes before Tony Stark's design. But There's no reason whatsoever for you to be able to tell the difference between the Iron Man suit's deltoid, bicep, tricep.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it specifically looks like it has great deltoids. There's no reason for the delts to be notably bigger than the bicep connection. It can be a totally streamlined build, but it looks cool. That's adding a lot of weight to this thing.
You know who looked the best in Civil War?
In Civil War. Who?
Vision.
Really?
Because he was wearing cardigans over his suit that was permanently a part of him.
Dude wore a vest with a button-up shirt, was crushing sweaters. He didn't need to put no fake abs on them sweaters.
No.
He didn't put some shoulder pads.
That though. He was literally created with his suit as part of him. And over that suit, he's wearing like a shirt and then a shirt over that shirt.
Yeah, he's crushing it.
He likes to stay fashionable.
Yeah.
You can say. All right. I think I think our question is somewhat answered. But yeah, I think the Vision actually gives a nice segue to our topic. Mark, do you want to introduce our topic for this week?
Yes, I do. And so today we're going to talk about the little-known film known as Captain America: Civil War, the 13th film of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it ties pretty much every single Marvel film together. So today, I mean, I loved it. I love that movie, and I think we all are in agreement of loving it. But before we get into it, you know, right now audiences love it, critics love it. It's made $650 million worldwide. But before we get into it, I kind of want to know what you guys why you guys liked it and what are your favorite aspects of comic book films, you know, because instead of us praising it for an hour and a half, I would like to, you know, talk about a little bit about what you guys like about comic book movies.
Right. I guess I'll go first. So I guess for me, the big appeal about comic book characters is that, you know, obviously they're like, you know, they're super powered, larger than life, like imaginative heroes. But one of the great things about comic books as a medium is that they have, like, all these wonderful, elaborate stories that gives you a chance to explore these characters. There's always, like, these plot lines that, like, delves into, like, you know, other aspects of their lives or personalities. You know, in movies, it's a very limited format. You can't really delve too much into it. You know, you always hear, like, some comic book fans complain, like, well, they didn't recreate, you know, the storyline, you know, one-to-one, so-and-so. But I'm just like, it's just in movies, you can't really do that. I feel like as long as you maintain the spirit of the character, but at the same time, just kind of adding something new or like exploring the character in a different way, I think you're kind of staying true to the spirit of comic books. You know, just you know, maintain the character, but just shine a light on something new in the character. And I think, to me, that's what makes a really good comic book movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, you mentioned not having to show the same thing every time, but for some reason we've seen as many Mr. and Mrs. Waynes get shot as we've seen Waynes.
Also, that is
like
also
the one where we've seen the exact same tragedy in every single first Batman new actor movie.
Also, poor Uncle Ben, right?
But I mean, for me, like, so I mean, comic books are just they're the hyperbole of all of our most wonderful childlike imaginations that we can still enjoy as adults. They have all these superior skills and powers that we wish we could have, you know, to solve problems. Teleporting. We've joked about Jumper a lot of times, the fantasy of teleportation or super strength or what you could do with that super intelligence and things like that. So the thing is that's not it, because you can have that and still have a lame movie. And you can have these grandiose action scenes that seem so amazing, but we all saw A Good Day to Die Hard and never really cared at any explosion that happened at the time. So big explosions alone don't matter without, you know, a character-driven urgency, right? So when you set the bar for the property destruction, the immense powers and responsibilities that come with these characters, and you honestly even do a half-assed job of getting me to buy it in a scene, you've succeeded in taking me in a fantasy. You've succeeded at taking me somewhere else. And not just because I'm watching a movie, you know, it's like you admire the character for what they're doing and what they're fighting for a moment, because it matters to you. And I think that's amazing. And even though when Spider-Man got introduced in this movie, he, you know, basically just got inserted into this movie. But the way that they introduced Spider-Man, they introduced him with looking for a sense of purpose. And so some people might say, oh yeah, they just put him in. Tony just found him and said, you're going to help me in your an adventure. And I heard some people complaining about that. It's like, yeah, but he found someone that, that only he recognized and linked to the person behind this mysterious hero. And this person needed direction. As simple as it is, he gave him direction. And that character, when we meet that Spider-Man, is just such a likable human, you know, emotionally, just looking for purpose, but worried about laying low and worried about consequence. And he just, but he, you know, he kind of unleashed the beast of Spider-Man and gave him to us in a way that was just like, wow. And I loved every moment Spider-Man
was on. And also, Robert Downey Jr. was hitting on Marissa Tomei.
Dude, I would be hitting on that Marissa.
That's a new aunt for sure. Normally it's been like Sally Field or somebody else. So this is like a new type of aunt.
You know what, John, Lazabeth was saying too about, oh, and people get upset when they don't, you know, make everything the same. Mm-hmm. People are complaining Aunt May is supposed to be older. I'm like, dude, how many Aunt Mays do we need to see that are 69 years old? Fine. Let her be 50-something. It's cool.
Yeah, I was listening to Kevin Smith review this film, and he said, you know, so many people are very protective over the comics because for a long time, you know, in the 90s, comics weren't that popular. You know, it was a smaller niche from the comic books. So they grew so like they grew so in love with their characters and hate them being messed with. But if you look at comic book history, there's so many different variations of there's so many different Spider-Man storylines, Superman storylines, Wolverine storylines. So I kind of look at these new movies as like a new story. You know what, like some That's of the true, titles,
especially Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man had the most. I think he had something like 6 or 7 completely mutually exclusive origins before ever there was a theatrical release.
It's kind of counterintuitive to like hate on these movies because they're not what you wanted in the books. But this is just like another, what Kevin Smith said, this is like another variation of the characters we love and they're being handled well. And for me, when my favorite comic book movies are Unbreakable, Spider-Man 2, so what Ebert said about Spider-Man 2, the movie demonstrates what's wrong with a lot of other superhero epics. They focus on the superpowers and shortchange the humans behind them. X2 is my third, Iron Man is 4, and Dark Knight is 5th. And Ebert said, Iron Man and Dark Knight, these films, this film and to a lesser degree, Iron Man, redefine the possibilities of comic book movies. What I like about these movies are all the characters. And they also have, like, human villains, which is amazing. I like human villains, which Civil War has in spades. And if you look at the top 5 grossing comic book movies of all time, you have Superman the movie, The Avengers, The Dark Knight, Batman, and then Spider-Man. And I mean, those are just kind of iconic movies that really worked on characters. And then the top rated comic book films of all time, according to Metacritic, Rotten Tomato, blah, 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 are The Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, Guardians of the Galaxy, Superman the movie, and Spider-Man 2. And all those films are really character-driven. You know, if you think about Joe, except for Dark Knight Rises. Hey, Batman, you want to go to Red Lobster? But Guardians of the Galaxy, just the characters in there. Superman with Gene Hackman, and Superman was a dork, you know? And Spider-Man 2, that train scene with Doc Ock. You like Doc Ock. He becomes Doc Ock. And then there's that train scene where he's fighting to save the people, and the people pick him up over their heads. Like, the movie doesn't forget. Like, so it seems like all the favorites, and money-wise, critic-wise, are the ones that really focus on the characters. And I think that's what Civil War does, and that's why it's being called one of the best Marvel film or one of the best comic book movies ever made.
Yeah, and then just look a couple weeks ago in our 55th episode, we were ranking the Marvel villains, and we were talking about, you know, like, Thor, was it Thor 2 that had that evil space elf?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then the Frost Giants, too. Like, these things that – they're magnifying the property destruction compared to any of the Spider-Man movies. But I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just don't care. As good as the effects are, I don't care at all. It's like Transformers 4.
Oh, gosh.
You just don't care what's happening.
So remember on Unbreakable? Like, they destroyed – Sam Jackson destroyed a train, but they didn't show it. Like, they just showed
– and you were so affected by it too.
Yeah, and I think Cap does a good job of that as well, of just kind of – I don't know. There are some explosions, yeah. You know, innocents do die, but it's smaller. And the violence is much more intimate because of the bad guy. So my favorite comic book villains are Sam Jackson, Unbreakable. I know it's not a comic, but just get over it. The Scarecrow from the Batman series, Baron Zemo from Captain America Civil War, the Dark Knight, Joker, and Doc Ock from Spider-Man 2. And I love Wilson Fisk and David Tennant. And they're all basically humans as well. So I just love the human element. And, you know, what I like about this movie is, I guess we can talk about the movie, sorry I'm going off, but, like, it's two people who are wrong at various points, you know, separating entire crews and getting people hurt, you know, for their egos, you know. And, like, it's interesting that these people, these characters that we've loved, are making these very human decisions, even though they're superheroes.
Yeah. So. Laz, it looked like you were about to say something, so I was bated breath.
Well, so, you know, I kind of wanted to add to that a little bit. Well, I just want to start off by saying I think I read a review like a couple weeks beforehand. It was a spoiler-free review, but they mentioned that Civil War was a better Avengers movie than Ultron was. And after seeing the movie, I can kind of see why they said that. The Avengers 2 kind of fell flat because it didn't feel like they didn't really do much with the relationships established in the Avengers group dynamic. But in Civil War, you know, you had like, you basically had like kind of a splinter like between like this awesome like superhero group. And it was really cool to see. I mean, it was kind of sad that the band was kind of breaking up a little bit, but it was cool to see, like, the relationships kind of take a development, you know, so to speak. So
it wasn't superficial. There's a lot of superficial stuff in mm-hmm. Ultron, but yeah. There's, you know, actual character thing. You know, like, they learn, you know, they separate.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vision and Wanda, Elizabeth Olsen, they make Sokovian dinner together.
Yeah.
With paprika.
I don't even know why she was going out to get more paprika, because paprika does nothing but make things red, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think paprika has any culinary value other than reddishness.
Maybe she put some of her, like, rave dancing voodoo on it.
Yeah, sprinkle a little paprika on it.
She's the character I feel the worst for, just in terms of powers. Because, you know, let's say there's a big action scene, right? So when you're filming the big action scene, you have all the stunt doubles and the costumes. But then there's, like, her, and she has to sit there, like, looking like she's raving for, like, 12 days, you know, like, like, just throwing energy orbs.
I mean, look, if she really likes Street Fighter, and she can just imagine that she's Hadoukening a lot, it's kind of cool.
And, hey, so I want to say something funny. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I found a lot of parallels with Kevin Smith, because in the movie they say askew, like, view askew, and someone's uncomfortable in the back of a Volkswagen. Like in Mallrats.
Dude, oh, wait. So you just brought up that Volkswagen. In terms of the human element, all these movies, right, all these Marvel movies, they have their good one-liners, right, especially Tony Stark has all these great one-liners. But in general, you know, they're loaded with them. But when the one-liners are interactions, they're more valuable to me. And Falcon and Bucky had, like, three exchanges, and one of them was in that little VW Beetle, whatever, where he's, like, what is it, Bucky's crammed in the back?
Yeah.
While Captain America is out, like, talking to someone, and Anthony Mackie Falcon is sitting in the front, and he's, can you move your seat up?
No.
Like, it's just, you can tell that, like, it's almost like the brother and sister who don't get along at the end of a long road trip.
Yeah. So what did you guys like? So I guess the plot of the movie is the superheroes, some of their stuff goes unchecked. Innocents die. They want to do some accords to make them responsible to the government. You know, Iron Man and Captain America take two different sides. Right. But then there's some dude out there causing all this havoc, framing Bucky So everyone's hunting Bucky, but Captain America wants to save Bucky, and then that splinters them more. But then they find out the plot, and then it all leads to a massive fight at the end. Does that sum it up pretty quick? I guess if you're listening to this podcast, you've watched the movie. So.
You have to have watched it.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to, if you haven't watched the movie and you're listening now, I guess thank you for listening. I guess I'm not going to tell you to stop listening, but it would be in your best interest to hit pause.
Yeah.
Go watch the movie, and then come back a few hours later and hit play and resume this podcast.
You know what I liked about that initial Avengers thing? It's Wanda, Scarlet, who the Russo brothers know how to use Johansson perfectly. Like, she's the best in these movies. Cap, Bucky, I think it's just four of them, right?
Banner's not around.
Yeah. And so it's them fighting against Rumlow, Frank Grillo from Cap 2, and they're trying to get some vial and some place. But they're not, like, that good yet together, all four of them. So it's kind of like an ugly battle.
Yeah.
That was interesting, too, like seeing good old Crossbones there. You know, it was nice. I enjoyed that little exchange.
And I also liked how, you know, Cap took an untrained team out there. Like, Wanda wasn't really trained that much. So, like, when she blew him up, you know, that was Cap's fault because he didn't see the grenade. Actually, that's always like a MacGuffin, grenades. That happened in Kingsman. Like, listen, guys, if you're a superhero, just check for a grenade. All right? Lasvath, when you were a superhero, did you check for grenades?
No, but you know what? I think, because we're about to go to commercial, I think I'm going to check for a grenade right now.
I'm looking under my seat. You just got me nervous.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back in a little bit. Hopefully, no grenades will have gone off.
Grenade free?
Yeah.
Hey, podcast listeners. Robert here, along with Kyle.
What's up?
And John.
Hey.
We're here to talk to you about a little podcast that we do called Shark Dropper.
Yeah.
What do we talk about in Shark Dropper?
Oh, all kinds of things. Kyle, name one of them.
Oh, geez. Walking across America.
John, name another.
Ooh, video games.
No, we never talk about that.
Yeah, that's
stupid. So if you want to listen to Shark Dropper, don't listen for the video
games. We talked about video games last week.
You know what? Just don't listen to John at all.
John, just don't listen to him talk.
Okay.
Yeah. that's a good rule of thumb.
But if you want to listen to me and Kyle talk, along with John intermittently, but really don't listen to that part.
Hi, guys.
Go visit sharkdropper.com because you can find everything there.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I actually did find a grenade under my seat, but I managed to dispose of it. I flushed it down the toilet, which is Robert Lamb's toilet of Shark Dropper. So I think it'll be all right.
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
So, guys, I guess, what do you think about the new character introductions? We talked about Spider-Man. I think he was perfect. What I didn't realize was Tobey Maguire was 26 when he got brought in to play Spider-Man, and Andrew
Garfield
was 29.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now this kid's 19. So, like, he actually looked like a little high schooler. Like,
yeah, and he looks he had me convinced that he was like a 16-year-old too.
Yeah.
Like, Tobey Maguire, he's got a boyish face, but it's like that's a bro with a boyish face. And Andrew Garfield, like, look, you have a dainty, sleek figure, but that's a full-grown bro. With
you failed 5 years in high school.
Figure, like, I feel like I'm still seeing Wardo from The Social Network, but older, you know. But I'm not saying I didn't like their Spider-Man, but you know, this was actually a little kid, and when he was bumbling around, like fumbling over his words, when he, oh gosh, I have Tony Stark in the room with me. Oh, my ideas are going all over. Like, you totally believed it, and it was sincere and approachable. And even though you know that he's actually physically the strongest person in this movie, if you follow comic books, at the same time, he's the most emotionally vulnerable. He's just a sweet kid.
And he had a Queens accent, actually.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
And you know what I liked about him? There was a joy to his character. Like, this wasn't like, you know, you watch like some of these, I hate bagging on it, but you watch some of these DC movies and like, there's just no, they're all like, but like with him, he's like, I'm loving this. Like,
yeah, I like those movies, but they don't have any joie de vivre.
Yeah. Like this kid is stoked. Like, he's like, you know, he's getting stuff thrown at him. Like, he's out of his league a little bit. You know, he's almost getting murdered by Captain America by having him dropping that thing on him. But, I don't know. There's a joy. And I love that. And what do you guys think about Black Panther? I thought that Chadwick Boseman was awesome. Like, he got introduced and I was like, I like this guy.
Yeah. It was a pretty cool way to introduce his character by showing his father get, you know, assassinated by Zemo, and you know that kind of gives like a motivation to his character. It's like, well, he's out for revenge. You know, it's a very good reason, and I think they introduced just enough to make you want to watch a Black Panther movie, which, you know, that was good. Good on their part. When I don't know, Black Panther is a very interesting character. I don't follow Black Panther too much. I do know that his homeland, Wakanda, is supposed to be a technologically advanced nation. So it's you didn't really see too much of that, you know, play out in the movie.
Wakanda is like the origin point for vibranium, or that's where the biggest mine stores, the biggest deposits of vibranium are.
Yeah. It's I guess that suit was a prod. Well, not, I don't know if it was a vibranium base, but I think it was just like, you know, a product of the advanced technology that's coming out of Wakanda. So it was also
He has a vibranium suit.
Yeah.
Because like when he got hit by machine gun fire, they kind of absorbed it.
Yeah, but no, it was cool seeing him fight. Like it was a very primal fighting style, which, you know, obviously fits the character very well.
And the CGI was great with him running, and then just him as a character. Like, it's weird. He just got inserted in, but you're like, I like this guy. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I liked his motives, and I liked his I think my favorite scene of the movie was Baron Zemo's, like, monologue at the end, and the way that...
Oh, yeah!
And the way that Bozeman, instead of letting Zemo kill himself, he just choked him out. Like, that showed, like, a lot of grace from the dude. Like, he learned. He wanted to kill this dude, but he's like, oh, man, this guy screwed up. Like... I thought that was a great scene. Daniel Brühl is the MVP. I mean, remember Rush? He stole that movie from Chris Hemsworth. Like, that Brühl. And Inglourious Bastards. This, like, I was watching this scene between Martin Freeman and Daniel Brühl at the end, and I was like, these are two amazing actors playing bit roles in a Marvel movie. Like, we're spoiled. Like, these guys, that Brühl is so great. But I guess going back to Panther, I don't know. I liked when, like, someone was joking around with him and he didn't have any of it. Like, he was, like, he had a jokey side, but he was also, like, very serious. Like, he was, like, a king. Like, I don't know. Like, I liked that.
He had a powerful presence. And like you said, I really appreciated his motives. And his screen presence, you know, it was powerful. For someone who we have never seen in one of these movies, right? They just dropped him in. See, Spider-Man got dropped in, and it's other than, like, the nice personality, it really was pure gimmick. Whereas Black Panther got put in, that had to work for the movie to work. And that guy did a great job with that. What else has that guy been in?
He was in Get On Up in 42.
I mean,
it's good. Like, you know, they could have lost this. Like, remember in Lost, they introduced Nikki and Paolo? And everyone's like, I hate you.
Hey, guys.
I hate you people. I remember I saw that episode, and they introduced them, and I went, I don't like them.
We were just chilling in the background the whole time, guys.
I think I said, I don't like you. Yeah. I don't like you. Get out of here. But now, like, the introduction, I like the introduction of Martin Freeman, you know, from The Office and The Hobbit. The minor roles he had, but I think he had a good weight to him. Like, I think that he was kind of fair, but he was also, like, he didn't have much to do, but I think he's going to have more to do in the Black Panther thing.
I don't know if this is a fair or unfair thing to say. Like, I think that he played his character well. But I didn't like seeing Martin Freeman play a character who didn't have any fun zest or any Britishisms or
big feet.
Like he was playing the role straight, except he didn't have anything opposite of his straight role to make it, you know, funny.
Oh yeah.
He was purely playing a straight role. And he did it, he did a good job. But when you have someone like that do something, there needs to be something countering him on the screen to make it work. Otherwise, you just have random actor X who does a serviceable job. So it's, I don't know. I felt like they just kind of put him in there because they could get him, but they didn't really work him into the script where his character carried Martin Freeman weight.
I gotcha. And he didn't eat a second breakfast.
Yeah. No, or a third breakfast.
You know, I really thought him and Robert Downey Jr. would have like a, you know, a couple of scenes where they were just kind of going back and forth with witty repartees, but that never really came to fruition, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I feel like a couple of those scenes would have been good.
The best burn of the movie is when Ant-Man... So a lot of them are in prison, and Robert Downey Jr. goes to visit them, And Ant-Man's like, yeah, Hank Pym said to never trust a Stark. And then Tony Stark looks at Ant-Man and goes, who are you?
And then he's like, ah!
Ant-Man's like, oh, I walked into that.
Can we talk about, I mean, I want to talk about Ant-Man, but I guess we can also talk about the big fight at the airfield. But
Giant Ant-Man?
Yes, it was awesome. I'm a huge Paul Rudd fan anyway, but like seeing this movie, I'm really glad they just gave Paul Rudd a chance to be Paul Rudd. It's like, oh, hey, you're Captain America, man. I'm shaking your hand way too long.
I love that they let Paul Rudd be Paul Rudd almost before being Ant-Man in a way around those superheroes.
And you know what was cool is like he got to play like a huge part in the fight. Literally and figuratively. I mean, you had like the part where he was riding like Hawkeye's arrow.
Right? Oh, that was so awesome.
He was really small. Then he just kind of climbed into Tony Stark's suit. He was like, this is your conscience. We haven't talked in a while. Just like unplugging stuff.
And when he was on the arrow, didn't he actually say like, yep, I'm all set, arrow guy. Like he doesn't even know who all the people are.
Yeah. And then there's like, obviously like the awesome scene where he's like, all right, I'm going to do this one thing. I've only done it once before in a lab. And he just grows into like this huge, like what, 50-foot Ant-Man. It was awesome. Like, no, it was even more awesome when Spider-Man sees him. He's like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then of course, I mean, and God bless him for making this work, because I would have been saying, God damn them if this didn't work. But when there was that moment where they're like, hey guys, we're writing basically an Avengers movie, right? And this Marvel Universe movie, and now Disney has us, and Disney has Star Wars. So let's have Spider-Man join the Avengers inadvertently, fight Ant-Man, and make an AT-AT Walker reference about Star Wars.
You guys see this old movie called Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah. And they're like, "What? Where'd you find this kid?"
You know what I do? My favorite part is of Ant-Man is when they introduce him, he's sleeping in the van.
Like,
dude, that was almost like Bruce Willis in the beginning of Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Jeremy like, Renner's like, yeah, Renner's like, he's a real go-getter. He's sleeping in the van.
It's like, come on.
And I also love that Spidey comments on Cap's shield. He goes, that thing does not obey the laws of physics at all.
Yeah, that was nice. Thank God that someone said it, because the vibranium suit of Black Panther was the most physics-defiant nuisance I've ever seen on screen.
So what do you think about them saying about the fights? They're saying it shouldn't be Civil War. They're saying it should be more like Captain America collegial misunderstanding or Captain America intramural pickup game.
So I think what people are complaining about really is that they couldn't recreate the epic battles that was seen in the Civil War comic books, because you had
literally where you have like 50 people to a side, explosions and ectoplasm of magic everywhere.
Going to my point earlier, though, it's almost impossible to recreate, you know, one to one everything that you see in the comics, and honestly, you don't really want to see that. I think they. You know,
if they did a CGI movie, if they did a 100% CGI, not even human actors, right?
But even like, then, do you even want to see that? Even then, though, do you even want to see that? Because it's like you are watching something where you already know exactly what's going to happen. And that's kind of boring to me. You know, I want to see like a different spin on something else. It's really, I think the big fight scene, it did its job. It was entertaining. It doesn't have the same, you know, epic scale like it did in comic books, but it's not really supposed to.
I don't know how I keep finding ways to refer back to Die Hard movies, but in Live Free or Die Hard, Kevin Smith had a command center in his mom's basement. I feel like the people who are at least presenting themselves as being legitimately upset online with that pickup basketball game analogy, I feel like those are the people with command centers who have a little too much free time and are just looking for something to criticize, which don't get me wrong. On this podcast, I do that every episode. It's one of my things too. But I acknowledge that I'm criticizing for the sake of being critical. Whereas a lot of times when people put on their internet mask, they're just like, this is horrible or stupid because of this. I think that people just need to acknowledge, yeah, we've seen the comic covers online. We all have Facebook. We've seen the comparisons of 80 people versus 9 people on a battlefield. It doesn't make it bad or subpar. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It was awesome.
Because like, it allowed it to focus on the characters.
That's just it. Yeah, if there were 50 people to a side, who's going to care about any of them?
Yeah, I mean, like the little beats, like when Spidey got Bucky and Falcon Spidey down with his webs, and then Falcon looks at Bucky and goes, "I hate you."
Yeah.
No, it was because Falcon used that little mini thing.
Something,
but he used that to disengage Spider-Man from the fight, and Bucky's like, "Couldn't you have just done that earlier?"
I hate you.
That was another one of their exchanges. Their exchanges, man. It's funny because even though they're one-liners, you know that there is a lot of like read between the lines stuff that happened off screen, if you will, in the story that built up to these lines. Mm-hmm. And they feel like it feels like a lived in annoyance with each other.
And as much as there were like jokes in the fight, the scene where War Machine gets shot down by Vision by accident, and then watching Iron Man and Falcon try to chase him, but then seeing on the wide shot that they weren't going to get him, and you're like, right, War Machine's going to come through. He's going to come. And then, boom, just on the ground.
Yeah.
And then Falcon looks at Robert Downey Jr. and goes, "I'm sorry." Then Downey just blasts him. He just lifts his hand up and shoots living shit out of him. I loved it. Like, so, but I mean, because War Machine, I think he's doing the right thing. He believes he's doing the right thing. He's a good dude. I'm team Tony anyway. But that scene actually had some weight to it. And then the repercussions of him becoming like paralyzed and like, so their decisions hurt one of his best friends. Like, they say you got to kill characters, but I think knowing that your friend, you know, suffered massive damage is enough. You don't have to murder somebody.
You know something else I liked about that, actually? Because what I expected when it first started happening with the drop, I'm like, oh, okay, Falcon's going to help save him, and Tony's going to give him a nod, and it's going to be like truce for 10 minutes, and then we'll fight more later. Like, that's what I thought it would be. And then when he hit, right, and I just thought he was dead, even though he wasn't. But then later when you see the rehab scene and the way that Don Cheadle, you know, or I don't know War Machine's character's name. I always forget.
Brody. But Brody.
Is that what?
Yeah, okay. Rhodey.
Yeah, yes.
Rhodes.
Yeah, there it goes.
It's Rhodes. So when Rhodes is like, you know, Tony Stark is like, oh, you know, this is so tragic. You know, we're going to get him, whatever. And he's like, hey, man, you know, I've seen this many tours of combat and, you know, I keep coming out. And, you know, like this isn't so bad. He gave a very human yet pragmatic and realistic and kind of optimistic outlook on it that was one of those refreshing scenes that I really didn't expect to have. I thought that he was going to be martyred, and they didn't martyr him.
And just when it became too serious, Stan Lee walks in with Tony Stank.
Tony Stank.
Oh, my God. That was Tony one of the Stank. Most delightful little cameos. In Rhodes is like, I'm not letting that one go. Tony Stank, table for two. Tony Stank.
That's so cool. Tony Stank.
Is there a Mr. Stank here? Yeah.
And then, so guys, what about the villain? I some people haven't liked him. Some people have loved him. What did you guys think about Daniel Brühl's Zemo?
You know, I love Daniel Brühl. I think he knocked it out of the park like he always does. It's just, you know, I feel like he, unfortunately, his character took a backseat to the big fight between Tony Stark and Captain America. It's just, you honestly didn't really care too much about the villain and what he was doing. You just want to see more of, like, what was going to happen between Iron Man and Captain America. That's how it was to me.
But he set that up, though, right? So he succeeded.
He set that up. But, I mean, at the same time, it's like, you want to see more of, like, Captain America and Iron Man going at it. You kind of want, like, Zemo to kind of, like, hurry up with all of his scenes. It's like, come on, man. Just do what you got to do, but do it quicker, you know?
Yeah, the thing is that it's not until late in the movie that you realize that he's more than a henchman. I thought that he was a very high-up henchman for a greater order or something. Because he's not behaving in the way or doing the things you expect the bad guy of the movie to be. And don't get me wrong, the bad guy was really the collective conflict of Tony Stark and Captain America, sure. But, you know, as the catalyst for that, it wasn't so obvious to me. He was playing it the way it should be played, and it should be understated. And when he reveals it later, I really appreciated that. When he reveals that he's just a regular human, you know, who lost his family and he was enraged. But what can he do? He can't go fight Tony Stark or Captain America, but he could make them hate each other. It was another one of those human moments that worked in this comic book film that really just crashed and burned in so many of the other comic book films. Again, I'm gonna pick on like Thor 2, how we like some of our heroes, but the conflict just totally loses us. Other than the big explosions, like I never cared. Yeah. Whereas this, I cared about almost every single punch thrown by everybody in the whole movie.
He wanted to get the information from that Hydra guy. And he's like, listen, this will save me from hurting people. Right. And then the guy's like, no. So he's like, OK, well, now I got to do this. And then he had to set that explosion, which is crazy, to like set up Bucky. I don't know. People say that it was a big jump, but I think he planned it out pretty well with that explosion and then like getting him caught. And he knew that that guy, you know, which is actually one of the directors. He had a cameo in both Cap movies. But like I liked his whole plan. I don't know. I felt like a guy who was part of like an elite death squad could probably figure this out. And then I love that instead of creating the super soldiers, he just murdered them all because he didn't want to deal with them anymore.
That was very unexpected. And at first, I thought that was so stupid. I'm like, where is this movie going? But then, of course, right after my perceived disappointment, it was not 30 seconds before, you know, he pulled the curtain to the great and powerful Oz and his real motive. And then we got to see that unfold.
Yeah, he just wanted to get to Bucky, use those codes so we could get access to that. Which I mean, whatever. I love it. I love the human element to it. I like that he tried to kill himself. I like that Black Panther kept him alive. I like Martin Freeman talking smack to him. Maybe Scarecrow is my favorite villain of the Batman trilogy. I mean, he's not even that bad. He's just like a thorn in the side. Like I kind of like those kind of villains. Like they're not powerful enough, and they don't eat at Red Lobster all the time, like Bane.
Is it me or was – so now, granted, this is like, you know, a sequel upon a universe sequel, whatever. So all the characters do seem to get stronger and stronger in every movie. But let's put that aside for a moment because I accept that in the world of sequels and bigger and stronger and everything. But is it me or was Vision specifically less powerful by a landslide in this compared to Age of Ultron? Like, I feel like he alone could have solved all this. And his tapping into all forms of electronic intelligence ever in a second and solving things, like, I feel like he could have been like, I tapped into 89 programs and we did the, you know, facial recognition. That wasn't Bucky. That was some other guy. And this is who that guy was. Because in Age of Ultron, he was like, he was Christ-like perfection in terms of his abilities. Whereas in this, he was like, I can walk through some walls and do some tricks.
Well, he was torn up by love, man.
Yeah.
But still, it seems to me like he didn't even have that super intelligence anymore where he could have just been like, well, let's just do this, 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 and this. Instead, he's just like, I'm going to wear this cardigan and hope that she compliments.
Isn't it? Like, well, she did too. But didn't Shakespeare say that love makes you dumb?
Sure, fine, but still, man.
The thing is
that other people around him aren't in love who know what he's capable of, like Tony. I could find 89 things to pick at in this movie, and I happen to be picking one guy who's in his command center in the basement. See how you can admit that? But like, it's one of those things. It's just that he had such a presence in the previous movie. So I'm not nitpicking a little writing trick or plot hole or filmmaking device. It's more like we were presented with a Hulk who's now a guy who can't bench press 185.
Well, this is just a speculation on my part, but maybe the Vision was deeply affected by the events of Ultron. He saw Ultron, a being who was just like consumed with his thirst for ultimate power. And it was just like, Vision was like, you know, I'm very similar to that. Maybe I don't want to go down that road. Maybe I can start, you know, holding back a little bit, you know. It's just speculation on my part. He seems to be very benevolent. He doesn't want to hurt anybody, you know. Maybe he's just holding back.
Renner's head like a a cherry.
Oh yeah, seriously.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't think he used the full extent of his powers, Lazvath. Right? He didn't want to.
Yeah.
It honestly struck me that he didn't know they existed.
But if you also think about it, Whedon brought him in with his script, and then the Russo brothers were like, "Holy crap, we have a god character."
Yeah.
Well, all right, shit. Put him in a sweater.
Get a cardigan on. Too much paprika. He didn't, or not enough paprika. He's flawed.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they were trying to, like,
cute. Don't get me wrong. I like these little things.
So maybe they kind of had to dial down that a little bit just for the sake of the battle. I mean, because you had an archer in there. You had, like, some weird dynamics. And I don't think anybody wanted to kill each other in those battles. So maybe, like, Vision was just trying to put all, like, when I was bouncing, I remember I got two hipster kids in, you know, headlocks at the same time. So, like, maybe he was just trying to headlock everybody. You know, just, like, calm everyone down. And maybe he thought it wasn't his battle, too. Like, he knew – I mean, the world wasn't at stake with this. Like, they were worried about some assassinations, but there was no – I mean, the biggest battle was, like, a thing at an airport, and a lot of people are just going to get paid overtime to fix all that stuff.
But so, they didn't know that.
What?
They didn't know that, though. They thought that something bigger was going to be at stake in the long
run. But, I mean, it was just, like, political assassinations, not, like, you know, Sokovia dropping on top of –
So where did Hawkeye get those arrows that have, like, god nullifying abilities anyway?
Maybe it's like electromagnetic. I loved how he did that, though. I mean, but think about it. So you've been beat up, right? Because you're an archer, and then you probably just develop, like, smart arrows.
Yeah, I want to say, like, maybe he got them from Nick Fury, but that kind of leads to, like, my next question: where was Sam Jackson in this movie? Where was Nick Fury? Like,
he was car shopping. It's hard to replace a car like that.
That's true.
Yeah, that amazing SUV. He's still mourning that loss.
I mean, like, it wasn't like
a special order the parts.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't. You know, his presence would have been like integral to the movie. But I feel like it would have been cool to see Nick Fury just, like, pop up and do something like he always did in Marvel movies. Like, it was really weird not to see him in Cap 3. Like, you were just expecting him to be in there, you know?
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, I would have expected that, too. I mean, I guess the way it worked out, I guess it wasn't too needed.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming he's going to be in the next Avengers movies, so we'll see what happens.
Dude, Sam Jackson makes that money.
Yeah. Well, no, didn't his character retire from S.H.I.E.L.D. at the end of Cap 2? Wait, no, he came back for Avengers 2.
I'm getting too old for the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Get another diehard callback. Oh my god. Or no, I'm sorry, Lethal Weapon. I'm sorry.
I think we need to do a whole diehard series podcast. That'd be fun. Guys, what any other thoughts about this movie? Like, what favorite moments?
The airfield fight was definitely the highlight of the movie for me. The kind of like the brutal, like, a fight between Captain America and Iron Man after Iron Man finds out, you know, what happened with the death of his parents. Like, that was a pretty poignant scene, too. I think it was a really good movie. It was a better Avengers movie than Ultron was. Was it better than Cap 2? I don't know. It's close, because I love Captain America 2, Winter Soldier.
I think it's better than Cap 2.
Iron Man's the best.
Yeah.
Iron Man is the best. Iron Man 1 is the best.
But I don't know if it's better than Cap 2. I think it's right there. Yeah. I think they're like... But see, that's like saying I like the greatest burger ever compared to the greatest...
steak ever.
Right? Yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Like, or chicken sandwich ever. Oh, you know, it's okay, like... Yeah. Or I like a filet mignon or another beautiful steak. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not saying one's bad. Because some people are like, what? And you're like, no, but I love them all. They're sitting there, they blow up.
Okay, first off, the 18th best burger is better than the best chicken sandwich.
No way, brah.
All right.
So one quick thing. Captain America. Do you like him do you think he's very pompous as a character? Like, because his buddy at any time could murder somebody. Like, Bucky almost killed Scarlett Johansson by choking her to death. You know, like... And Scarlett's like his BFF in these movies, Black Widow. She's like always there for Steve, showing up to funerals and everything like that. So here's this guy that's like running amok, hurting his friends, and he's trying to like keep him alive. You know, and like, do you think those are pretty selfish you know, splitting up the team. He doesn't want to sign those accords. Like, yeah. Do you think whose side were you on this?
I thought so. Well, it definitely seemed like Tony Stark had the more rational, thinking, which is kind of that's saying something. If you know Tony Stark is more rational than you.
Well, Vision was on his side too. Tony Stark's Vision's like, well, yeah. If you think about it, and then I was like, oh, Vision's on Tony's side.
Yeah.
You see, there is that, but at the same time, and this was something that impressed me, by the way, with the movie, is that I never, not even when Bucky and Steve Rogers were tag-teaming Iron Man, I never would have believed that Steve would allow Iron Man to be killed. However, I absolutely believed that Iron Man was going to kill both of them if he could at the end.
I didn't think he'd kill him.
Yeah, we got
Iron
close.
Man, you don't think he'd kill him?
I think
the
he would have killed
he
Bucky.
Blindly saw past the fact that Bucky was programmed at the time that he killed his parents and just started, like, I need to annihilate this person. He even had prison crazy eyes.
like Eddie Griffin from New Guy?
Except more horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I was every bit convinced. I actually had a conversation with someone else about this, how, like, it's like Iron Man would have killed them had he the power to do so. Steve Rogers would not have killed Iron Man.
Yeah.
Despite the power to do so.
And you can't blame him, really. You know.
I don't think Tony would have cold murdered him.
Yeah, I think he would have. I think there was no rationale whatsoever. All
right, guys, before we start wrapping up, there's also one thing I want to point out. How awesome was that one scene in the beginning of the movie where you see a teenage Robert Downey Jr.? Like,
I'm sorry, that was like maybe the one scene in the movie that I hated.
That took me back to school. I wanted a triple Lindy to happen.
I thought it was so cool. I'm just like, wow, that's like, this is kind of freaking me out a little bit.
Like, I felt like I was looking at an emaciated like Robert Downey Jr. with cancer.
And it all started with Tron too. Jeff Daniels.
It was freaky. It was kind of freaking me out. I'm like, wow, this is looking really, really good.
That's a very expensive scene.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that worked. No, that worked.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I saw that.
How much do you think that scene cost? The CGI to do that? Like, whatever. Give or take tenfold. I don't know. But like,
I mean, how much time does it take to
is that millions of dollars for that scene?
Yes.
I believe.
I was going to say five. But then I was thinking, like, if Tron did that, if Ant-Man did that. But that technology is, like, that's 3 to 5 million, because if you think about each pixel and then the people getting paid to do that and then to render that and then to shoot, like that's every frame doing that. So I would say 3 to 5 million in just man hours and then rendering and time and everything like that.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
And they better have not have had like four takes to do that on. They were like, we're going to do one. And this is like, you know, we're not going to do three different versions of this.
Right. Right.
So,
all right, guys, before we wrap up, final verdict, Team Cap or Team Iron Man?
Team Ant-Man.
There you go.
I abstain.
Oh, really?
Oh, wait, Team Spider-Man. We don't have to pick one? I'm Team Spider-Man.
Wait, I'm Team Marissa Tomei.
Yes.
Ooh, I want to be on that team. Do we shower together?
What?
Because we're on team with Marissa Tomei, not you.
Oh.
Yeah, that would have gotten awkward.
Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks.
I'm Team Teenage Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Robert Downey Jr.
I thought he was going to like go find an Anthony Michael Hall to tease or pour a milkshake on.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, guys. Before we sign off, are there any plugs we want to make?
Yeah, guys. Movies, Films, and Flicks. Stop at the website. If you want to ask any questions about Hush or Honeymoon, go ahead and ask us. We'd love to hear them. Also, go to www.johnlazavathEatsOreos.com. And it's basically John Lazavath eating Oreos while not watching movies.
I live stream every 9 p.m. Every night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So,
And it's kind of like the channel FX, where after 11 p.m., it gets, you know, a little risque with eating the Oreos.
The other day, it took him 2 hours to eat one Oreo.
It was I wanted to do something different because I usually do the opposite. Just go through like a whole bunch really fast.
You did 10,000 like little nibbles, and then the week before you did 2 packs in like 6 minutes.
There's only so many ways you can eat Oreos, man.
And then you fell asleep for about 2 hours and left the camera on.
Yeah, he pulled the Godzilla.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big battle eating an entire box of Oreos.
Yeah, man.
I'm napping after I eat that.
I mean, I think that half a box of Oreos is equivalent to one Muto Monster. Yeah. So it makes sense that
I definitely felt like one.
So we need to take Laz out, right? When we're all together, we're going to take Laz out. We're going to get him infinite appetizers. And then we're going to see how long he naps for.
Yeah. Dude.
What's the over under? I got 6 hours.
I'm going to be too distracted eating my infinite TGI Fridays dumplings.
Dude, so
like those hot stickers.
Levinger and I went to TGI Fridays, and we both got like the infinite appetizers. We would get kicked out.
I guess I'm driving home.
Well, we would get kicked out way before.
I'm the designated driver. Like, were those guys drinking? No, pot stickers.
Yeah.
Pot stickers. What's his PAC level? Wait, I guess it's not that. It would be BPC, blood pot sticker content.
This is a quick and random digression here, but I just recently discovered there's an all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue place here in St. Pete. So I'm gonna try to check that out sometime. If you guys never hear from me again, it's because I'm probably still at the the buffet eating. So,
do they have Height and Max? Do they have like Korean beer? Do they have Mekju?
I have no idea. Apparently, it's a new place. I have no idea. So,
if they're go Mekju, Duge, Juseo, that's 2 beers, please.
Oh,
Height, Max.
I don't know. As long as they have the, I forgot what it's called, but the short ribs that they do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And kimbap. Man, I'm hungry.
Did you just say the name of a Hanson song?
Yeah.
Guys, kimbap. Bop. So, guys, I'm going to leave you on this. This is who should have been Captain America and Falcon. Paul Walker and I'm Always Hungry Tyrese.
Oh, yeah.
Playing their characters from Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, that would be great.
Paul, that would be the best duo ever.
Oh, Vin Diesel plays Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Oh!
Oh!
Family, son. Like, that's like... Oh!
Ludacris plays Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. Michelle Rodriguez is Black Widow. Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman. Wait, Sun Kang is...
Tony Stark.
I like that.
I could see that. Yeah, the different little play on that.
And then who's the guy that drinks Corona terribly? He's in the first Fast and the Furious and the fifth one. He just basically pours it on his head.
Martin Freeman's character, right?
Yeah. Wait, The Rock. We forgot about The Rock. Who's The Rock?
The Hulk, even though he's not in Civil War.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right, guys.
What was it? What was that Hulk Barack Obama thing?
Saturday Night Live? It was
The Rock Obama. That was it. The Rock Obama when he turns into Hulk.
I love it.
But he's still presidential.
Make this, well, Paul Walker, but.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. I think we just came up with the greatest fan fiction movie ever.
Oh, don't we always?
Yeah, you're right.
All right, guys. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hello, and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks.
John, let me get...
The Rock Obama.
There you go. I've been your host, John Lasso. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark. Go, go, go.
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.